For the Purpose Critique Review, Positive Vibes, the Shiny Squirrel Podcast proudly presents...
It's the Nerdlings Podcast, and I'm WC Chronicles, your senior host.
Yep, Jersey Mike, junior host. That was weird.
Well, it's on now, and we got...
Weird, that's all I can say.
Just leave it at that, so we
got... Did Facebook cause your phone to shut down after yesterday's shutdown?
Well, we have movie and TV guy with us again, because I like talking to Greg. He's got a lot of knowledge database in his brain, and he's here with us.
Plus, he's a big-time director slash executive movie mogul.
That's what we heard. Oh, you flatter me, sir.
So, before we turned on the mic, we were talking about the somewhat hilarious Facebook-Instagram breakdown.
Yes, where all millennials freaked out because they couldn't figure out what to do with themselves.
Now, do you consider yourself in the millennial zone?
Yes, I am a millennial. I fit in there snugly.
So what is the actual criteria of a millennial? What is the age?
I'm 1981 to 1998.
You are now a millennial.
A millennial?
That's what he said.
Millennial slash this. I mean, what exactly is a whatever the fuck?
Millennial.
Millennial. It's the people that are supposed to peak at the beginning of the 21st century.
Something born after 1999. Or 2000.
After 1999, think I'm that young?
Or 2000, I don't know.
1981 to 1998 are millennials.
So millennials apparently must have had a tough day yesterday, sir.
Apparently. After that, I think they call them the I generation because of the iPhones and everything.
iPhone.
So the Zacharias of the world are I generations,
just
to give you an understanding. Oh, he was a talented kid.
Yeah.
But he's like 6'2" probably now and is like 14. It's a crazy, crazy world genetics. Anyway, back to the Facebook outage. Yeah, it was funny. I only posted one thing, which was go home Facebook, you're drunk, which I think was fine. But
that is funny. I like that.
But all my friends were basically like, no, I can't post pictures. No, I can't see what other people are doing. My modeling life is over. Instagram is falling apart.
Alright, I want to apologize first. I still got my cough. If I pull away, I will try to cover my mouth, okay?
Oh, okay. As long as you got your shots and you're not anti-vaccine.
Oh, he's anti-vaccine, alright. We have another sad thing to say.
I'm not done yet on the Instagram thing.
He wants to laugh before the sadness.
To me, I always get the update. It says, time to update your files or whatever. It comes on usually Tuesday. And I've always noticed Tuesday and Wednesdays are the days that Instagram just goes off the chart haywire. And it's just like, I give up. I'll see you back on Thursday, and I'm done with you on Monday.
Okay. I've actually never noticed that, to be honest. Is it on the computer or just the phone?
Just the phone.
Oh, the phone. Okay.
Yeah, so...
That's because you're a memimeral. You have other things to do. When you get middle age, that is something to
just
do.
Just don't call him a memorial.
A memorial? No.
Leave the word glands out.
I'm not there yet, We'll stay away from the crazy syllables.
So what's the next? You were going to say something?
The shutting down that place we went to. Bonnie Springs.
Bonnie Springs.
I'm a little sad
because
was pretty cool.
Did you
have a chance to get out there at all?
Yeah, I've been there a couple times. John Lindley actually worked there. He was one of the zombies.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did the haunted house when I first moved here.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I used to, literally from casting call, that was one of the first gigs I ever got him. So I would take him from casting call, from class, literally, and drive him over there when they were doing the Bonnie Screams.
Wow.
So he was, out of anybody we know, you would have been the person to talk to about Bonnie Springs. So he's sad about it.
Mike had never been out there, and I'd been out there. Had not been out there since I was out there for like 10 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
And it's just like, gotta go and see it. Like, I'm still uploading pictures to the Facebook page.
Yeah, I think it's sad because they tried really hard to get people to show up there, but these old people, they're too old to go to the old places.
Did you hear how much they've sold it for?
Oh, well, they sold it for the developers, right?
$30 million.
Yeah, because that was originally something that Howard Hughes bought back in the day. So, and then, an older woman hung on to it ever since, all those years. And she died a couple years ago.
I thought her name was Bonnie. But
maybe?
She's still around or something?
No, I don't have no idea.
I know we talked to one of the workers out there. He's the one that told us it's $30
million. Okay.
And he's like, they're just really tight on the money and everything.
He doesn't even
know if they're going to get a severance package.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
I would be...
I'm just like, wow.
I would be pretty... upset with that.
That's nuts.
I think they should, because I signed a petition for them to save that and maybe turn it into a national park, because I think that would be kind of fun, because it's right there next to Red Rock. Why would you want to build houses unless you're super rich and don't care about the environment, to slap houses right there next to the Red Rock that literally you can look up from Bonnie Springs and see it?
Because Bonnie Springs is like a combination of an old west town and Knott's Berry Farm.
Knott's Berry Farm. Yeah, with a little bit of rides. You know, I actually, there was a restaurant in there, and I always was amused because there's a bathtub right in the bathroom.
That cracked me up.
It says, yes, you can use this to go to urinate. It was awesome. Just throw the thing, and then we'll be ready to go, man.
I'd like to see if they're going to put that up for auction. You
know. The bathtub? Oh, yeah, man. Some rich person will Gucci it and make it like, oh, it's my Bonnie Springs Gucci bathtub. It's right here up on my top of Trump Tower.
I'd like to get the bar, and then I would chisel out those silver ingots, those coins they have in the bar that's epoxied in underneath.
How very British of you.
Scottish.
Oh, okay. Well, still, the Brits were trying to take the... I'm talking about the whole aisles. Yeah. Talking about, oh, I'm going to take all the Egyptian diamonds and jewels and put them in the British Museum.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
Call them the crown jewels, so they're thieves too.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of imperialism was not good on ancient artifacts.
So anyway,
conversation is going like this emotionally.
Well, we got to get some of this early stuff out. So let's get started into our we're talking about movies and TV. We do have trailers here because Jersey Mike's probably not seen some. Greg and I have kept up with them, but let's do the first one, and that's Captain Marvel. Let's roll the trailer. What they've been using.
Hard to explain. I keep having these memories. I see flashes. I think I had a life here. But I can't tell if it's real.
You want to go first?
Sure. Didn't realize there was a line.
No.
Well, let me just jump in here.
Go ahead, jump in.
You're a director. How do you think a big set like that and seeing all the graphics and the effects, what would you have to take out of your actors versus like a smaller set to a big set? How do you see the comparison? Is it more stress on the director or is it more stress on the actor or just the whole thing?
I think that depends on the situation. I've literally thought about that. I thought, okay, if I'm an actor and I suddenly go into a big set, it might be very overwhelming to suddenly go, whoa, look at this thing. They built all this. And then that might have some type of impact on your performance, but you have to act as if this is completely normal, unless you're like in a giant spaceship and you're supposed to be freaked out, because that's the human reaction to that. But, I mean, if you're in a small film and you're, in an apartment, you should be pretty... you feel pretty normal doing a scene like that in there. I think if you're a director, it depends on the director. If you're James Cameron and you're doing a big, big set, he's probably comfortable with that because he's got an imagination and all the money in the world to boot. But if you're somebody like Quentin Tarantino, who does have big budgets still, but he likes them in fairly normal situations, like, you know, even if it's Kill Bill, you know, it's a small set, you know, he likes it to be about the actors and their cool dialogue versus, like, you know, a gigantic set all the time. That might change when he directs a new Star Trek movie. That's his next big franchise thing. So, yeah, it depends on the situation of the actor or the director, I would say. But that's a good question, actually. I literally thought about that, like, a day or so ago.
You've already seen it, right?
Captain Marvel, yes, I did see it.
without giving too much, tell us about
without spoilers. It's interesting because I will say I enjoyed it because I really like I like Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. She's interesting because she is a beautiful girl that is playing a tough woman, and that's really cool because there's been some criticism about people saying like, oh, she's kind of wooden and she's not that interesting of an actress, which is kind of unfair because I literally had this conversation with my best friend Mac earlier when we were doing a video edition, which is, so Brie Larson, who's an Oscar-winning actress, for the movie Room, not to be confused with The Room, but a movie called Room, mm-hmm. in which she plays a mother who's trapped in a shed. There's this guy who kidnapped her and impregnated her and has pretty much kept her in captivity for years. And then she had a kid, and now they're trying to find a way to escape.
Hey, kind of like the government does to the people.
Oh, wah, 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 ba-doopsh. So anyway, the idea, yeah, that's called white slavery. So anyway, improv, ba-doop, psh. So anyway,
bang, bang.
So with the idea is, going back to my important point, is that Brie Larson has to play a tough woman. And it's really difficult for a beautiful woman in this day and age to be seen as, and it's sad, to be seen as someone who could also be funny. So, because literally, think about it. What's a beautiful woman that, like, is, like, hilarious, like, as also a comedian? Because it's easy to think about that with a man, like, oh, Will Smith, he's, you know, he can play tough guys, and he can also be hilarious.
Right.
Chris Pratt, who just did Guardians of the Galaxy and Jurassic Park movies, the Jurassic World movies,
action and humor.
Action and humor. But it's really hard for women to be given that chance. I literally had to stare up at my wall at my posters and think, Terry Hatcher, she's beautiful, she did Lois and Clark, she's hilarious, she did Desperate Housewives, she's hilarious. But it starts to get really hard to think about that, because I'm all like thinking about SNL actresses all of a sudden who could be beautiful and hilarious at the same time. Like, I think Kate McKinnon is actually pretty awesome. She's on
Nameworthy, thank you.
Yeah. So it's hard to think about that. And so when people are arguing about like, oh, she's wooden, it's her character is meant to be tough. She doesn't have to be funny all the time or have a lot of personality. Because if you look at all the women in Marvel movies, they're mostly like just badass and have like, they're like despondent.
Well, I mean, Carrie Fisher is Princess Leia.
Oh, yeah.
Badass, but soft at the same time.
Yeah. She could be definitely funny when she has all her arguments with Harrison Ford. That mm-hmm. was pretty cool. But that's a good point because Carrie Fisher in real life was apparently hilarious. But she didn't do that many comedies outside, like, The Burbs, you know, which I really like that movie.
And Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers, she's hilarious in that. She should have had more scenes in that movie. So, but yeah, you know, Hollywood needs to give more opportunities for women. And I don't mean just Marvel movies, women now taking on the, you know, we've had Wonder Woman with DC, with Gal Gadot playing, you know, the lead in that. And they've been trying to make female-led superhero movies for a long time, since Supergirl with Helen Slater. Financial flop, the guy who directed it, Jeannot Schwartz, good friend of mine, he's a really good guy, directed Jaws 2, Summer in Time. Bingo with that, Cool School, those are his good directing points. But Supergirl, they tried doing that back in the 80s and it didn't really work out too well. And now they're really starting to make good superhero movies just now, even.
What's the running time on Captain Marvel?
Oh, it's a little bit under 2 hours, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the movie Billie Jean, remember that?
Yeah, it was with Helen Slater. I haven't seen it, but I've seen the cover on the shelves. I do want to see that movie.
Now, Brie Larson spent some time out here in our little...
At Nellis Air Force Base.
Did they film anything at Nellis Air Force
They might have. I know she did training because her character, Carol Danvers, is a pilot. Because
if there's the training parts where she's on the ropes and the obstacle course, probably filmed part of that here in our backyard.
They probably, maybe not so much the rope part because there's like grass there, but I would say that they definitely filmed probably in the hangars over there at Nellis. I haven't been to Nell since I was 22, I would say if it's a beige brown hair, that's probably Nell.
Because in the trailer, I'm glad you told me about the 1995 part, because mm-hmm. when I started to watch the trailer again, I'm going, holy shit, there's Blockbuster.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow.
What is she doing in Bend, Oregon? Because the last Blockbuster
is in Bend, Oregon. Good shrimp. I've been there.
I got two friends who live there.
Oh, that's very nice. I actually thought it'd be fun to go in there and look at the museum of the Blockbuster time. I was personally a Hollywood video guy.
You bend over in Oregon?
Wah, wah, wah.
I mean, Bend, Oregon? That's the last place a Blockbuster was, honestly?
They would always make jokes about that.
Oh, my gosh.
They actually,
it's actually called the Farewell, it's called Farewell Bends, because when the pioneers were coming in and they would start to follow the creek, which is the Deschutes River, it would be one bend after the other, one bend after the other. And finally, when they got away from the river, they basically said Farewell Bends. They were done with it, but they shortened it to just Bend, Oregon.
Because the cool thing about that area, and I read an article and watched a video on it, is that the Blockbuster is now part of kind of a growing arts district in Bend, Oregon, as far as I know.
Man.
Like, there's film festival stuff of old movies, there's lots of paintings going on over there. So it's part of it now.
It has its own little Silicon Valley there.
Cool. Good stuff.
Good skiing, good outdoor weather, everything.
I like the fact that Oregon still has full-service gas stations. Ding, ding, ding. Would you like some... I don't know if they have Arco there. Would you like some Arco? Go in your tank.
The bizarre thing is, Jersey's the only other state that has pump from the people to pump.
Really?
The gas.
They still have that in Jersey?
Yes, Jersey and Oregon, the only two, I think, in America. Isn't that crazy?
That's weird. That's the old 50s thing. Yeah. I always laugh at that Back to the Future where Marty's completely shocked when he's looking. And Hill Valley's supposed to be a California town.
I'm
going to
use that as a segue, because you said Marty looked at Back to the Future. Lightning, electricity. There seems to be a lot of electricity going on in Captain Marvel, which brings us to our next one, Shazam. Let's roll the trailer for
Shazam. This is like my era.
David Batts, I choose you as a champion. Say my name so my powers will become yours. Shazam.
Are you for real?
Say it, okay?
Right?
What are your superpowers?
Superpowers, dude? I don't even know how to pee in this thing.
This is proof of authenticity. Super strength. Electricity manipulation. Hyper speed.
I'd like to purchase some of your finest beer, please.
Sparkle Fingers.
No, it's not. That's not my name.
Chosen One.
Oh, you're like a bad guy, right?
You literally did the opposite of what a superhero is supposed to do. You're him. You're the hero.
You're welcome for not getting wrong.
I'm Batman.
Get him, Batman!
How old are you? Basically 15.
Yeah, you electrocuted a bus and almost killed these people.
And then I caught it!
You leave tall buildings in a single bound.
I'm so sorry!
Jersey, Mike, what do you think of it? Your first some thoughts.
I just want to know what's the comparison between that and Superman. We'll pass that over to the movie guy, because it reminds me a little bit of Superman slash...
It reminds me of the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, a little bit, because it's got that humor. I mean, it's going to be a fun movie to watch, no matter what.
Yeah, I think this is funny, because you did a perfect transition. When we talked about this in the last podcast, briefly, was Captain Marvel versus Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Because this Shazam is actually also a hero named Captain Marvel.
Oh,
but
wow.
He was invented in the 40s in Wiz Comics. And I couldn't remember the name of the comics
until I looked
it up.
Okay.
Wiz Comics, which eventually got absorbed into DC Detective Comics. So DC is competing with Marvel, and they're making a Shazam movie, but they can't use the name Captain Marvel anymore because there was a copyright issue.
And that's why the long span in between from the 70s TV show... Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. So, exactly. So, basically, they're calling this movie Shazam, and there's this joke called, his name is Captain Sparkly Fingers. Sparkle Fingers. And obviously, they're going to probably try to give him a new name by this movie to see if they could, you know, use a new brand. All they have right now is Shazam, so all the old fans, and you said Superman, same era, same fans who grew up on Superman from the 40s on, Superman Action Comics and Captain Marvel, Shazam in Wiz Comics, you know, eventually becoming DC. Now they're making a Shazam movie after all these times. And it's hilarious that a Captain Marvel, the Marvel version, which was done basically to say, well, we're going to have a Captain Marvel because we're Marvel Comics, and we're going to make a eventually what became a female superhero named Captain Marvel. That was also a guy named Captain Marvel, and then it became Miss Marvel, and then you had Captain Marvel, the woman, Carol Danvers. And you could have a whole podcast just devoted to Deathstroke versus Deadpool, Captain Marvel versus Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers versus Kara Danvers.
You got a whole lot of duets going on.
A lot of duets of competing and almost like battling copyright issues. But this is the only one that actually is documented on Wikipedia, is a Captain Marvel versus Captain Marvel. So basically, DC is making a Shazam movie because their Zack Snyder directed Batman and Superman movies, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League didn't make as much money as they were hoping in comparison to the Christopher Nolan starring Christian Bale Batman movies. So they're kind of changing gears with Aquaman and Shazam, and they're trying to make more fun movies because they realize Marvel movies are really fun, and they're not just dark and brooding and make you feel bad. Like Man of Steel definitely made me feel bad. I had a high when I was making Batman. When I was watching Batman v Superman, it was gone in 30 minutes.
Wow. I almost want to find myself laughing like Beavis and Butthead watching this Shazam trailer because it's just like,
this is gonna be so fun.
I gotta breathe. This is gonna be so cool
because it's like big. It's like Tom Hanks is big.
You're gonna be part of it there.
It's a kid realizing he can be a superhero now. How he could totally mess up so badly.
When William Catt was doing The Greatest American Hero, the aliens bring the suit down. They possess the suit on him, but they lose the manual. But you're still part of that,
Did you see the Transformer movie Bumblebee?
Not yet. I actually want to.
I saw that when that first came out. See, that's something like how always the underdog, roughed up, thrown in the damn friggin' dirt, buried, comes to life. And that's just what this Shazam movie reminds you of. But it's crazy on how you have growing up, the Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
You have Marvel comic versus comic. This. You have Superman, Shazam. I mean, wow, it's just so overwhelming. How do you define? I'm just going to go back to the director mode. How do you keep all this when you do your ideas to get scenes lined up and everything?
Brother, I don't know. The nerves in my brain do it for me. But, I mean, it is confusing. The only way you can probably, in my mind, I try to filter it into an organized system is I buy the movies I actually like, and I give the movies that I'm kind of like, what's that going to be? A chance. If I like them, then I will talk about them more. If I don't really like them that much, I hardly ever talk about them. Like, literally, you brought up Bumblebee. I have only seen the first three Transformers movies. I kind of gave up after the third one.
That's about what I did.
But by Michael Bay. And I thought the third one was the best of the ones that I saw. I never saw the Mark Wahlberg ones. So that when they decided that they weren't making as much money on those last couple Mark Wahlberg, still directed by Michael Bay, though, Transformers films, they decided to have another director do Bumblebee, and then Spielberg said, why don't you make it about a teenage girl discovering Bumblebee? So leave it to Spielberg to, give the benefit of a doubt to a new director to kind of pave his own way.
Wow.
So the whole...
See, there you have it from a director's viewpoint. Doesn't get better than that.
The whole electrical thing that Shazam does, I don't know if this either happens to you, but I get in and out of my car, I touch the metal, there's that little shock I get every time.
Yeah, static electricity.
Yeah. Well, the other day, for some reason, the storm or whatever was going on in the air, I look and I see a little big... it's only a quarter inch or maybe a half inch arc of electricity. Touch it, get out of my car, see that electricity. I'm like, ooh, Shazam.
I was going to say, what superhero are you, Wade?
The whole electricity thing, I'm like, cool, this happens every time.
Yeah, and if you were more of a DC nerd, you would say, oh, I'm static shock.
Static shock. Yeah. Like both universes.
Oh, so do I.
Static Shock is cool.
I own the first three Superman Christopher Reeve movies. I own Lois and Clark, all four seasons. In Batman, I own Batman Forever. I own the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. I own a lot of DC animated stuff. I love the DC TV universe. That's where DC's kicking ass right now. Is Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow.
You ever see the cartoons where Captain Marvel and Superman have to team up? Because I've heard comparisons where Captain Marvel, or Shazam, let me get that right. Shazam, I don't want to get...
Shazam is technically the wizard who gives them the powers.
Shazam is a little more, almost as strong as Superman, in
my opinion. Yeah. We talked about this last time. There's a movie called Superman Shazam, The Return of Black Adam. And it's where Superman, it's an animation, but it's Superman and Captain Marvel, because they call him that in that movie, team up to fight Black Adam.
But to me, Shazam is still just that clumsy, awkward 15-year-old kid.
Kid who's so just still trying to figure out how this works.
Yeah, he's still trying to figure out how to go pee in the suit. You know?
Yeah. Because he, according to the wizard, Billy Batson was worthy enough to be that superhero. And that's kind of the cool thing about... That's a cool thing to... A cool message to pass on to young people, that you have to be worthy to, you know... rise up and become,
that is,
you
a good
know,
because
in the military, that's exactly what it is. You have to be physically able and you have to be mentally able to do the job, do the mission. Because if you're not, you're not going to.
Military is not here to conform to you. You have to conform to the military.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's why they break you down and build you back up again. I am the son of an Air Force man.
Oh wow!
So let's get to the next one. Event
kind of like Scientology. Some of the things we went through, right? Bull baiting in school and different stuff. Honestly, that's what they do, right? They break us down. Acting, method acting. We went to Shari school, casting call. They broke you down. We had bull baiting. I had to call Zachariah something, blah, blah, blah. The kid cried. I felt bad. But they said no, because there's going to be fans or people that are going to be critics to you, and you have to learn to get a thick skin. That's what they do, just like military. They basically restructure your brain. Right or wrong.
Without sticking my finger too far up into that controversial hole, I will say the funniest thing I said when I was at one of those seminars over at the Church of Scientology was, I literally said it, I think you might have even been there, I said at the top, when somebody said, hey, I have any questions, and they were talking about some of their methods, I said, hey, this is literally like going on a date. And they're like, what do you mean? And I said, well, it's like about trying to understand the other person, and it's trying to come up with a camaraderie and a common, you know, common threads, and pretty much allow yourself to fall into a symbiotic relationship where you are no longer two people, but one.
Well, you're putting that in there. Here's what I've always wanted to do. You got the people who believe that the Earth is flat.
Oh, geez, we're down there.
Hang on. The flat earthers, okay? And then you got the folks who believe that the Earth is hollow. There's a hole at the top of the North Pole and the South Pole. Let's get the flat earthers and the hollow earthers arguing together, and then you step back and then just watch the fun
and shoot a cruise missile at them.
Let's get on to our next one, which
the moon is made out of cheese.
All right, so Avengers Endgame,
blue
coming up,
blue or white cheese or American cheese, what color do you think the taste of the moon is? They always do that. You
ranch dressing.
Yeah, exactly.
Tastes like fondue.
There you go.
All right, so Avengers new trailer, but let's run the Super Bowl commercial, or the Super Bowl one that they showed a couple months ago first, and then we'll show the new trailer.
Some people move on, but not us.
Bad guy Thanos has just come at the end of the last Avengers. You summarize it.
Oh, okay.
Please.
So, after 10 years of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, they reached the big bad guy, who's kind of the Blofeld, to reference James Bond. Blofeld being Bond's arch nemesis, the guy in the background with the cat, who has mostly his Spectre agents fight Bond for 5 movies, and then you realize there's this guy who's actually really in charge. And he's around for several movies. So Thanos is like that for the Marvel Universe. He's this big, strong villain with a lot of...
Big like Hulk.
Big, can beat up Hulk, and basically has way too many resources and has megalomaniacal visions of ending half of life in the universe because he wants to help the universe by... creating a situation where we don't cause a strain on resources.
Oh, wow.
Because this happened, this is his wound. This happened on his planet, Titan. So the Avengers all fight him in this big quest to get the Infinity Stones before he does, where he could snap.
He has this glove, and there's these five stones that go into it, and that gives him the ultimate power.
Is he the glove one like Michael Johnson?
Bigger and better.
Bigger and brasser. So basically, he takes a snap of his fingers from the six Infinity Stones, and half of life disappears.
Oh, wow.
So now we're in Avengers Endgame. We have all the original Avengers who are still alive. A lot of the ones like Black Panther and Spider-Man have
disappeared,
dissolved into almost like leaves and dust. And basically, we have all the original Avengers. We have Rhodey, we have Ant-Man, we have Nebula, we have Rocket is the only one left on the Guardians of the Galaxy, and we have Captain Marvel, who now is showing up with all the, I think that's all the members that are still alive, basically in this new Avengers movie, the fourth film, to go back and fight Thanos and try to, I suppose, restore the people who were dissolved.
Which is perfect because they just released the new trailer today in conjunction
that's
with our...
That's all serendipity, sweet.
Well, they called and they said, can we, you guys are going to talk about
did
it.
They,
so I said,
did
sure.
They hit Mabel? Did Mabel get the permission from the vault?
Absolutely.
There you go.
I'm missing all context of that joke.
Don't worry about it. So here's the new trailer.
That seems like 1,000 years ago. I fought my way out of that cave. Became Iron Man. Realized I loved you. I know I said no more surprises, but I was really hoping to pull off one last one.
The world has changed. None of us can go back. All we can do is our best. And sometimes the best that we can do.
You start at
music by Alan Silvestri, same guy who did the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah, I mean the music, the score on that is pretty incredible.
Yeah, Alan Silvestri is a very talented guy.
I would not have noticed that unless you told me. So now I know something.
Yeah. He actually composed Spielberg's Ready Player One because John Williams wasn't feeling well. Because John Williams usually composes all Spielberg's movies.
Yeah.
But he did Ready Player One for him in the time that Williams had to convalesce from the hospital and surgeries. But yeah, very talented. I mean, he did the Back to the Future movies, did Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He pretty much has done almost all of Robert Zemeckis' movies as a director. He has also done The Mummy Returns. He did the first Captain America film. Brilliant, brilliant composer. I love Alan Silvestri.
Well, on that trailer, do you think we're going to get another trailer before Avengers Endgame is released?
Probably one more with Thanos. I mean, yeah. If you ask me...
In that trailer, there's no Thanos.
No Thanos.
Josh Brolin in complete CGI.
CGI, yeah. We haven't seen... We see his arm and his armor. Arm and armor. I can't believe I just did that. In the last Avengers trailer, not the one that Wayne just showed you. No, not in that one. The first teaser. You see it on like a almost like a scarecrow stick in the planet that he's relaxing in with all the flowers. With kind of a gladiator moment where he sticks his hand in all the... like alien daisies.
Oh wow.
So yeah, if you look back at that one, you'll find it. But yeah, but you don't even see his face in that one. Because the thing is, if you haven't seen Avengers Infinity War, spoiler alert, Thanos pretty much wins.
Yeah.
Because he killed so many people. He did it. He succeeded at what he was trying to do. This is why I'm going back to Blofeld, because on Her Majesty's Secret Service, the sixth James Bond movie, the one that stars George Lazenby, the only one that George Lazenby stars, Blofeld technically wins in that movie. It was one of the very first movies in a series where the heroes didn't win.
Didn't you have the honor of working with him?
George Lazenby? Yes, I do. I actually texted him like literally 2 days ago. He's right now in Switzerland for the 50th anniversary of Honor Majesty's. So plug in for George Lazenby. Go to his Instagram, George Lazenby, and you'll find him right there with some pictures of him hanging out at old locations. Wow. So basically, that was a signal. Even though that movie wasn't totally accepted at the time, because everybody was like, "Where's Sean Connery?" But now, literally, Sean Flaherty pointed out something a few months ago to me when I was editing. Sean said, "I think people got over the what happened. This is not the same actor." Around the time that Mark Ruffalo became the Incredible Hulk for the first Avengers movie, because within shorter than 10 years. Three actors played the Incredible Hulk.
Oh,
Eric Bana did for the 2003 film with the bad CGI Hulk that nobody really saw that much. You know, it was whatever. That was bad CGI or people trying to do CGI in 2003 and they didn't quite have the technology yet. Unless you're George Lucas, James Cameron, Steven Spielberg, Peter Jackson, or Steven Summers, basically, or the Wachowskis. Basically, then they had the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton in 2008, which was the part of the MCU that was supposed to be them starting over right after Iron Man and saying, "Hey, this is our Incredible Hulk now." But then Edward Norton pretty much got the boot because he wasn't like a team player, and then they cast him with Mark Ruffalo, which turned out worked out anyway because he looks more like Bill Bixby.
Yeah,
and he looks like Lou Ferrigno when he turns into the CG Hulk. So when I told John about. We were literally rewatching Marvel movies, and he was like, "Was there a Hulk movie?" I said, "Yeah, but you could literally watch the 70s Incredible Hulk, and it would still totally fit."
Yeah.
Now, for people who don't know in podcast, Sean Flaherty was in the movie.
Oh, Ominous. And Daddy Day Camp with Cuba Gooding Jr. And he played the villain's son.
Yeah, so you have some pretty high up friends, sir.
I suppose so. Sean would totally debate that. He's he's totally fine working on crews and working at lighting companies and so on and so forth this day and age. But he's a good buddy of mine. The people that seem to be the most ambitious people I have met in our circle seem to be Keith Harris, the actor at Casting Call, Shari Flaherty, the producer, my buddy Mac Hines, who also was at Casting Call, and my best friend, actor Stephen Moore. We all seem to have pretty good ambitions. I'm not even going to count myself in that because... I can't predict the future. I'm not a clairvoyant.
Did you see the fan-made film that showed the re-end of Infinity War where the Hulk runs up and he just beats the shit out of Thanos?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh,
I have seen a video of
Google
the Incredible
it.
Hulk
or
and
YouTube
Superman
it.
Fighting. I saw a CG version of Christopher Reeve's Superman fighting.
This one where it's basically like a rewritten bit of the universe where they have... Hulk. I mean, because there's just something that's cool about Hulk, you know.
Oh yeah, well, because he's the Mr. Hyde of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
He's Jekyll and Hyde.
Now,
literally, Jekyll is Bruce Banner, and poof, he's Mr. Hyde.
The She-Hulk, his Bruce Banner's cousin.
Sexy Hulk.
do you think they will ever tap into her story for
eventually,
a movie?
Eventually, because
they've done it for cartoon animation.
Yeah, with animation, but they need to prove, that's why they needed to make Captain Marvel. They had to prove that people wanted to go see a female-led superhero film. But of course they will, because everybody likes Black Widow, so they should have made a Black Widow movie, I think, two phases ago in the MCU. Because Black Widow is pretty much just female James Bond.
How far down is that down the storyline?
They're talking about that. I don't know if they have a director yet. They just what did they just do? Did they just greenlit She-Ra, the Asian superhero in the MCU. He's pretty much a martial arts expert. Not Iron Fist, but basically this guy who's Asian and has all these powers and kicks everybody's ass like Bruce Lee. Oh, so basically that, they just got a director of Asian American descent to take over on that film. But I knew that the movies that they're thinking about after Spider-Man Homecoming comes out this year is what I just aforementioned, that film, a Black Panther 2.
Oh my gosh,
I know that they're going to make a Doctor Strange 2, and they got to figure out if they're going to make a Thor. Oh gosh, this is hard to say. A Thor 4.
Thor 4.
Thor 4. I'm hoping for Kenneth Branagh to come back and direct that one.
Aren't they going to make a Youth Wasted on Youth 2?
maybe as a feature film one day.
All right, so anything, any last things to say about the Avengers Endgame?
I think everybody's excited for it. They're keeping it fairly secretive.
They are.
No, because they're mostly just focusing on the actors. I think Captain America's going to die. Spoiler alert.
Really?
Because Chris Evans, who plays Captain America, he's at the end of his contract, and there was a news article that said he was saying goodbye to Marvel. So that pretty much signifies he's probably going to die. There's a good chance that Tony Stark, Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, might die too, because he's.
Oh, you got to be kidding!
Well,
me.
He said it might not be true. He might stay with more movies, but Robert Downey Jr. once said that he was only going to play Iron Man as long as he thought it was. He would only stay as long as it wasn't embarrassing. Because he was worried that he would play the part so long that he'd become too old to be believable as a guy who could put on a suit and fight, you know, crime and aliens and
senior Iron Man.
Senior Iron Man. It's different with Superman, because going to Superman, there's been talk with Dean Cain saying he really wants them to do a season 5 of Lois and Clark.
Really?
And the way to market that, he wants that. He's been talking about that at comic conventions, because he basically said with the success of Supergirl right now, and he plays a part on Supergirl playing Carol's adoptive human father, Jeremiah Danvers, that if they do a season 5 of Lois and Clark and Terry Hatcher's all back on board to play Lois, she wants to do that, and John Shea might play Lex Luthor again.
Yeah.
Basically, they have to play it up as Superman Prime, old Superman. What is Superman like when he's an older guy?
That would be cool because
he still has the powers. Yeah, he's just older.
It just gives you another universe. You know, and I think that would be so cool to see.
They should do that. I am literally saying on this podcast, do it. I will literally write episodes.
Now, is it Dean Cain, Tori Spelling's husband?
Oh, no. I never heard of that before in my life.
I thought that was, oh my gosh, something Cain. I thought that was her husband.
No, Dean Cain was Superman.
Yeah, Dean Cain was the first not totally white Superman. He's quarter Japanese. So as a kid growing up, I was like, hey, I could tell he's kind of Asian. That's awesome.
Let's get into our next movie.
For show.
Have you heard about this movie called Yesterday?
Not at all.
I got one on the Greg Movie Guy. Okay. I'll just give a synopsis quick, a short explanation.
No, real fast, is that somebody trying to be the Cadbury Easter Bunny like they have on the TV commercials? You're trying to beat the movie guy here?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
And when he said Yesterday, I literally thought of the Beatles song.
Exactly. That's what it is. Okay,
okay.
The concept of the movie is it's this person. He gets hit in the head, has a bicycle accident, there's a storm, a lightning. He wakes up and he is in a world where nobody knows or even remembers who or what the Beatles were. He knows, he's the only one that knows the songs, what they are, how to sing them. So I'll let the trailer explain for itself.
I've never heard of that. That's clever.
It is so clever. I'm digging this movie.
So it's a comedy. A comedy. Very nice.
Until a month ago, you were a complete failure. And then somehow you became the biggest star in the world. As if by magic. So what happened?
Jeez. Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
When did you write that?
I didn't write it. Paul McCartney wrote it. The Beatles.
Who?
John, Paul, George and Ringo, the Beatles. No. Stop it. Yesterday. It's one of the greatest songs ever written.
Well, it's not Coldplay. It's not Fix You.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes.
I'm just listening to Jack's new song.
Oh, yeah.
What's this one called?
Leave It Be.
Let It Be. Well, rock on, Jack.
Word has got out about a new pop phenomenon.
Your music, it's incredible.
We need you to come to L.A. I'm offering you money and fame.
Hello, Mr. Sheeran.
Love your work, man. Especially the rapping.
Oh, really?
No, I'm only kidding. No, leave it to the brothers. That'd be my advice. Hey,
Jude. You're leaving, so I can ask you anything. How did I get in the friend column instead of the and I love her column?
Jack Mallon, we're a superstar.
We could have been the perfect match. But now you're the world's greatest songwriter.
I'm not.
Except that you probably are.
It is my honor now to open this door for the moment the entire world has been waiting for. Nah, wrong door.
Is it just you writing the songs?
Yes.
But is it?
I don't know. I've been a fool twice over. Perhaps love isn't all you need. But it's pretty damn close.
With the song, do you have a suggestion?
Hey, dude, are you sure?
Hey, dude. He's right. That's better.
For I babble my mouth open, Mike, what do you think?
Only thing I can say, it wasn't Hey Jude written about his son Julian and he couldn't say dude or something or something,
right.
Dad,
yeah.
Or something. Yeah, but
that's the joke.
Could you
they're
imagine
it.
A world without the Beatles?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Your turn, Greg.
Oh boy, I'm a big Beatles fan.
Me
so
too.
You totally surprised me at that one.
I thought you would have known about that one.
No, not at all, because I have two friends of mine, John and Sean, who are also big Beatles fans. So that's a surprise to me. It's also because it's an indie comedy, and sometimes, yes, bow to you. You just, have completely surprised me.
I need to get out more.
But it's funny because that movie wouldn't have been possible if Paul and Ringo weren't in on the joke.
Yeah.
Because they don't even have their music available on like iTunes.
Exactly.
So they had to be okay with that in order for that movie to exist, because before that, the only like fictionalized world of a movie with Beatles music in a lot of it was Across the Universe, which is a musical that I love. I think that's one of the best musicals of the last 20 years.
Didn't Michael Jackson own his estate, own the rights to the
oh,
Beatles?
Oh, there's a big controversy
there's
about
a big,
that.
Wherever that is in the courts,
yeah, there,
right
it's
now.
All over Wikipedia of like Paul and Michael wanting to work together, and then all of a sudden Michael said, "Hey, I bought all the rights to some of your music," and Paul like, "What?"
Yeah. But the idea of someone of entering this alternate universe where the Beatles never existed, and you're the only one that's been bestowed with remembering what the songs were, the lyrics, and everything.
Especially
and
if he's a musician.
And especially
he's
if you're a
it.
Musician, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, aside from the cute little bits of cut, the hey dude thing, but it just blows your mind.
Yeah,
to
some
me.
Of those are inside jokes on Beatles of Paul and John and George and Ringo trying to figure that out. Because the thing that is crazy about the Beatles, and I think about this a lot, is that when my dad was talking about the Monkees, when we had one of the singers of the Monkees pass away recently, he said there was controversy with the Monkees because they were a manufactured band.
Mm-hmm.
And they were put together by producers and studios, recording companies. But in the case of the Beatles, they literally were guys in Liverpool.
Teenagers
that hung out and played music together, and they all worked out together, and it became the dream team, essentially, of rock and roll from, you know, the British invasion rock and roll. So the thing that's interesting to me about a world without the Beatles is thinking how much music would have changed if there were no Beatles.
Because from the trailer, the guy is jumping around from, you know, from different points of like
different albums to different albums.
And then he goes to Let It Be, and then he goes to Hey, you know, kind of like beginning, end, middle.
Yeah,
you know,
he's going from
around.
He's going from White Album to
whatever
Abbey
he can
Road,
remember.
Yeah.
Well, right here, you wouldn't have the love song show at the Mirage. You
exactly.
wouldn't have that right in our own
yeah.
hometown. Imagine that wasn't there. No Beatles.
Yeah.
And then even as John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo, you would not have John Lennon's Imagine.
Yeah, you wouldn't have a post.
Oh.
You wouldn't have Wings.
You
wouldn't have a post.
No silly love songs.
Yeah, you wouldn't have a Paul and Linda getting together and writing some of the most beautiful music of a husband and wife.
You wouldn't have
come
Ringo
up with.
Star and the All Star Band. Just so many.
You wouldn't have the Traveling Wilburys. You would be missing
exactly.
George Harrison.
Yes. would be so many. There would be such a ramification of something like that in this alternate universe, you know.
Yeah, assuming that's what they play it up as.
That's
because
what I'm thinking.
The joke is, it seems it's a guy who realizes he could be so successful because nobody's ever heard of the Beatles in this alternate universe.
Yeah,
and but he knows he has the knowledge, kind of like a time traveler who knows knowledge of the future. So. But the thing is, and they pointed out in the trailer, which seemed really cool, that there was a girl that really liked him, but because he became so famous with his music, his own, what they think is his music, basically, she's like, we could have been together, but now you're so caught up in all this music.
Yeah.
And he's the only one with the knowledge that this is not his actual music. I suppose that the joke, maybe somebody who came up with the writer came up with this, is kind of like a kinetic Yankee in King Arthur's court who tells all the people in the castle, I will make the heavens and the sun disappear, but he really knows about solar eclipses.
Eclipse time,
he knows about eclipses, you know, and he's a baseball player, so he understands physics.
Didn't Bugs Bunny do that once?
Yeah, there's a Bugs Bunny joke about that. And then Disney made a kid in King Arthur's court, which was a kid who was a baseball player who understood things like, oh yeah, like I can make things explode, and here's bubblegum. You know, things like that. So that's a movie from my childhood.
I will be there when that movie comes out.
Oh, and going back to Marvel, there would be no Rocket Raccoon without the Beatles song Rocky Raccoon.
Rocky Raccoon!
Yeah,
yes.
That's where that idea came from for Guardians of the Galaxy.
I thought that, but you've just confirmed it for me.
I confirmed it, and I literally told Sean that a month ago. He was like, what? I like it even more!
It is. It's so, yeah, I'm looking forward to this movie. This is a movie I would take my parents to.
Oh, funny joke about yesterday. Yesterday, when Paul was writing that, he was writing that in front of the director of A Hard Day's Night, Richard Lester, who went on later to direct Superman 2 and 3.
Who was one of the creators of the Monkees.
Yes, and he's literally, when Paul starts singing that, he was like, scrambled eggs, could have a bunch of stuff on my food. You know, whatever was the lyrics he was saying. It was a song about breakfast food. And then Richard Lester was like, can you make that about something more meaningful? But Paul was always making songs about things that were fun.
Yeah.
So that people had to challenge him.
You know the story behind yesterday, right?
That was part of the story.
The medley came to him while he was sleeping.
Just like Let It Be with his mom visiting him in his dreams. Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
But the director was like, I don't like how you're singing about breakfast. Please make it about something else. So he was like, yesterday.
When I was doing stand-up comedy back in the late 80s and first part of the 90s, no one else was gomming on to the yesterday scrambled eggs thing.
Mm-hmm,
so me and a friend sat down and just rewrote the whole song based on scrambled eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually got Paul McCartney's actual lyrics that he wrote, and it's like they weren't mine was more the comedy part of it. Maybe I'll dig it out.
I don't know if this is true. He probably was writing it like that because John was starting to experiment with songs that made no sense.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the fact that Come Together mostly is gobbledygook, but beautiful gobbledygook.
It's one of
my favorite John Lennon songs.
You're just a spin-off of Weird Al Yankovic and the comedy thing.
In an alternate universe.
Yeah. Oh, man, because that's funny, because that trailer made me think of a movie idea I once had, and I told my friend this, and he thought it was hilarious. It would just be like a short film, like a skit, if I could somehow pull it off. It would be a movie director, a film student, invents a time machine.
Ooh.
And he goes back in time. And he kills, like the Terminator, famous movie directors. So when he's like, he goes and meets Walt Disney when he's still just drawing and trying to figure out Mickey Mouse, he would be up in the ceiling tiles, and Walt Disney would throw pencils up into the ceiling tile, and then the director's up in there, all evil, and he turns the ceiling tile upside down and drops it on Walt Disney's head and brutally murders him by pencils. So, like, all the deaths were all ironic. Like, David Lean is filming, like, Lawrence of Arabia, and the guy shows up, and he's speaking of mirages, he shows up, and then it's really this guy with, like, a giant, like, heat lamp and melts David Lean in the middle of the Arabian desert, you know? And then, here's the joke, he comes back to our time, and he's going to start directing movies thinking he's killed all the famous directors. He's killed the Wells, Hitchcock, Kubrick, he's killed Spielberg, he's killed all these directors. But he didn't kill Edward DeWitt Jr. So when he comes back to the future, Edward DeWitt Jr. became one of the most successful directors of all time because nobody paid attention to him when he was making movies in the 50s. People made fun of Plan 9 from Outer Space and all that stuff like that. But he grew up and he became successful. And so in the future, he's literally going, no! Because he didn't kill this guy.
So anyway, yesterday, I can't wait for yesterday. That's all I got to say about it. Let's get on to our next one.
Fun.
It just came out, actually. This is from Will Smith's website, from his YouTube channel. Will Smith as the new Aladdin coming.
The new genie.
New genie.
I know you guys have been waiting, and here's the very first trailer for Aladdin. Here's the very first trailer. Don't get dizzy, though. Don't get dizzy before we start the trailer. Don't get dizzy. Oh.
They're over there. Get them. Stop. Peace. You three guys are here.
Stumbled upon an opportunity. I can make you rich. Rich enough to impress a princess.
What would I have to do?
There's a cave of wonders. Bring me the lamp.
Summons me. I stand by my oath. Loyalty to wishes three.
I'm kidding. Watch this.
Watch out! You done wound me up. You ain't never had a friend like me.
Hey, can you make me a prince?
There is a lot of gray area in make me a prince. I could just make you a prince.
Oh, no.
Y'all see my palace?
Like a prince on the outside, but I didn't change anything on the inside. Showtime.
No, I'm in charge, okay? I say when it's done. Really? I thought a princess could go anywhere.
Not this princess.
Do you trust me?
In May. So, that's the live action of Aladdin. What do you think?
Speechless. This looks really, really, really authentic, like a Disney movie should be.
Yes.
It looks really awesome.
Greg?
I'm a little bit more apprehensive because when the second trailer for The Genie came out, everybody was a little horrified of Will Smith's face CGI'd on a CGI body and his arms looking weird. He looks a lot better in this trailer, to give them credit, because obviously Disney freaked out a little bit and said, okay, we got to show more Genie and make him look really good. I think the thing that makes an Aladdin live-action interpretation kind of scary is you're talking about the fact that Robin Williams was so popular from that original movie.
There is that part of it, yes.
Yeah, that's like arguably his most famous character next to Mrs. Doubtfire and Mork. So you're talking about like a huge legacy because Will Smith is pretty much taking like an alternate route and being his own thing, which is really good. But he's still embodying the visual of the Robin Williams genie.
I like Will Smith as a choice because, I mean, you saw, that's why I took it from his YouTube page, him playing around. He's still a big kind of playful kid at heart.
Yeah, he's a fun guy. He's a pretty funny guy, yeah.
And I think with, you know, having him as opposed, like, you wouldn't want to put Adam Sandler in as the genie or, you know, any, there's a long list of no-nos of those.
Well, he also works because authentically they're trying to make everybody look appropriate to the region. So you can have Middle Eastern people and African people in, albeit a fictional Middle Eastern country, Agrabah, or town Agrabah, but basically they look like people that's supposed to be there and not a white guy wandering around.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, he's the genie. He can look like whatever he wants to look like. But, you know, the thing that was, it's not so much that I'm worried about that anymore. Now I'm a little bit worried about the Agrabah looking too new and colorful. Like, why couldn't it look more like a real ancient Middle Eastern city, like the Thief of Baghdad,
like one of the bad guys from the from Indiana Jones and the Marketplace.
Yeah, in the Marketplace, that was shot in Tunisia, and those are real Middle Eastern buildings. I mean, I should say North Africa, but it's basically the similar region, similar topography. So the thing is that it's just kind of new, and all the clothes look like it was just made yesterday. My girlfriend was basically like, "Does Jasmine just get her clothes from 2018 and went back in time to the year, you know, 800 AD?" So I mean, it's an interesting question. But I mean, the thing that I was most worried about was Jafar being so young, because Jafar in the animated film was supposed to be
much older
and kind of scary looking. I thought Kabir Bedi, who was the main henchman in Octopussy, would be a perfect Jafar. Look up Kabir Bedi, who played Gobinda in the Roger Moore 1983 Octopussy. He looks like Jafar.
Does he?
He could have been the perfect Jafar. Totally look him up. K-A-B-I-R space B-E-D-I. Kabir Bedi. Look him up. He would have been Jafar.
So did you see, or when Disney did the live action of The Lion King, did you even bother with that?
Oh, you mean live action or old the CGI version Lion King? There's not a single thing real on that Lion King
movie. Whatever last one was they did. Okay. I didn't go near it.
You mean the Jungle Book CGI version? Is that what you mean?
No, the Lion King.
Well, the Lion King is just trailers and hasn't come out yet. The Jungle Book, the same director of Iron Man and Elf, Jon Favreau, just did the Jungle Book. So they're asking him, although that had a live action Mowgli in it, and probably some real jungle here and there from photographs they took. But, I mean, the...
I haven't seen either.
I like the Jungle Book with Bill Murray as Baloo and Christopher Walken as King Louie. Yeah, check it out. Scarlett Johansson is Ka. They made Ka a girl instead of a boy this time. I know Terry Thomas was the original Ka. And, what was his name? My brain. Who was the original Baloo? Phil Harris. There we go. My brain just worked.
Phil Harris.
Yeah, he was the original Baloo. And I thought Bill Murray was a good Phil Harris, like, next chapter. So basically, yeah, I mean, The Lion King, I'll be willing to look at that, because James Earl Jones is back as Mufasa, which is really cool. Yeah, because originally I thought would have been really nice is if they made a Aladdin, you could literally have taken all the unused takes of Robin Williams playing the genie, because he did like 6 hours of takes back in 1991 when he recorded the genie. And did a whole new alternate performance as genie if they wanted to do that, but I guess they wanted to, you know, get a new actor, so.
I don't know if you call it a reboot or something, but it's just
the live action adaptation, because Beauty and the Beast live action adaptation was so successful, along with the Jungle Book one, and all the Tim Burton ones. He's been Tim Burton-ifying Alice in Wonderland and Dumbo.
Plus, we get the Disney music again.
Yes, you get the same Alan Menken, Howard Ashman music, same guys who did Beauty and the Beast. So you get the same versions of those songs done in this new Aladdin. In the trailer, I wonder if because that sounds a lot like Brad Kane and Lea Salonga, who are the original singers for the original Aladdin. But maybe those are the new actors actually singing them, and they actually can sing, which is awesome. Because there was a lot of controversy about whether Emma Watson could actually sing in Beauty and the Beast. So, da-da-da.
All right, anything else you want to add about Aladdin?
I hope it works.
I can't critique...
A trailer. That would be unfair. So I'd rather wait till the movie.
All right. Gets us to our last topic one here. The Brady Bunch. HGTV is filming right now as they are renovating the real facade of the Brady Bunch house, making it look like the real Brady Bunch house inside.
Oh, they're restoring it? The same house?
They have gutted it. And, well, here's the thing. They got set about every once a week, maybe every few weeks, they will put up a video up on YouTube. It's a teaser of what's going on. So let's take a look at this, because this is the Property Brothers here, the twins, I think it is. And they are tearing out the window. Okay, remember when you look at the front door, the window that's right there off to the right? That window was not originally there. And that's where Mike's den, Mr. Brady's den, is supposed to be. So
I think Greg had that as a room at one time, remember?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he got the den as a room, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's...
They went to the garage.
Well, they got these great teaser videos that they've been doing, so let's put this up.
All right, we are back at the Brady House. A lot has been happening inside. This is probably the largest renovation we've ever done. It's probably going to be the most iconic renovation ever to happen in the country. We're restoring the original look of the Brady Bunch house, and this was nothing like that before. And we're going off of all of our, like, reconnaissance and forensic investigation to figure out what the old look was and what we can do now, because we don't have the old floor plans.
We're working on the stone that was in the entryway. We need more gray, right? Gray blocks? Working on finding this for the landings. Have you ever, like,
tried to collect rocks or seashells on the beach where you're looking for them for hours.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I have found my passion here.
I love the stone. I mean, it just brings back memories.
I remember for some reason it being hollow.
Oh, hold on. Yeah. That was, Nope, never mind.
Oh!
See, it's like having so brothers
bad.
All over again.
Jonathan, it is. Jonathan, Jonathan!
Well, it's not always fun working with brothers or sisters.
Oh! I'm being picked up by Drew.
I love doing this.
I pulled responsibility for the outside of the house and bringing it back into conformance with the picture that everyone knows as the Brady House. There's a window on the second floor that actually wasn't there, but in 1969, they took a picture of this house and hung a window. Why did they have a picture of a window? To give it the idea that it's a two-story house, and now we have to make it real.
Well, let's measure this out. We'll cut. We'll frame in the window.
I guess you're supposed to measure twice and cut once.
Measure once, cut once, install once. I don't think it was working for him.
Measure once, cut
twice, maybe more.
And then we're closing the window that's into the Kern House's kitchen, but will be where Mike's den is.
Gentle, gentle. Ha! Hey, Chris just wanted to have a little bit of that demo therapy.
Feels good. Mom always said don't play ball in the house. She said nothing about rocks. I got to throw a rock through a window. If there was a Brady that was going to do this, it was going to be Peter.
Oh, snap. No messing around. Put the saw down.
Oh, God. I'm a liability.
Oh, yeah. Still connected? Oh, there we go. I can pass that. You'll never even notice it was there. Yes! What a day. That was a day. We cut windows. We covered windows. We also teased Mo and Chris a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a great day.
Yeah, seems like a good sibling rivalry.
Sibling. Did you start on the wine already?
I did. Yeah.
I've been working all day.
Okay, so they put up a new one of those about every 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh,
you know?
That's right up my era, your era, way before you were born.
I got a question. Have either of you ever worked construction on removing a window out like that and putting?
No,
I'm waiting for that time with you.
I have, yes. I have, so I know what they're doing. You know,
but I remember when we went there before the Monkees concert.
Yes, 6 months Mike before and, this whole thing blew up.
Mike and what's his name?
Mike,
show?
Mickey and Mike.
Mickey and Mike show. And you lined up the actual cracks from the satellite to where the hole was coming out from the drain on the curb. So this is really exciting, seeing that we were there, now they're doing work on this, and it's a national pastime,
yeah.
Restoring the Brady House. I love this.
From your point of view, Greg, what do you think?
That's crazy, because it meant that, so they sold the house, and now these people own it, and they're pretty much restoring it to the Brady glory?
HGTV
they
bought
own it.
The house.
Interesting. So you were there when apparently they were selling it, or they just bought it?
We were there about 2 months before it was being put on market.
Huh. Okay. But the thing that I'm wondering is, when they filmed the Brady Bunch, wasn't that a set?
That was in the studio.
That was a studio. Yeah. So they're taking a house that they just filmed the front of,
yes.
And now they have to reduplicate the set in the house to make it look as if
yes.
It was a real house.
They've got all the build. They had to go through all the building permits. They're demoing stuff.
Gosh.
Everybody from the series.
I wonder if Sherwood Schwartz has anything. His estate has anything to do with this?
That's that's interesting.
Oh, this is awesome.
I mean, Sherwood Schultz Senior is not with us, but his son continues to run his business.
They have to add a second story when that house never had a second story. That's crazy. That's a weird promise you have to make to yourself.
It's really weird because you watch the show and then you see the house, and then to sit there and try to turn it in what you're watching and then what you feel, because you would first open the front door, you would walk in, step, there'd be that little shelf there with the closet over here, and then you would walk in
the sit area with the fireplace.
Yeah. And then you would walk back a little bit before you would turn to your right and go up the stairs. would be to your left, and you walk straight on back, which is where they were tearing that window out, where Mike Brady's den is going to be.
That's interesting. I wonder how big it's going to be after all that. Because I assume on the set they probably tried to make the house look bigger than it actually was.
I think so.
So now when you go into that actual house, you're stuck in the confinement of the actual building. Mm-hmm. So unless they add to the back of it, you know, they're going to be like, oh, well, this is the room, this is the den, but maybe there's not much room for the actual den. You know, how much room is there going to be for the second story just to accommodate the fact that they made a false window on the show?
Something to make it, I mean,
Don't forget they need a doghouse for...
They have put a call out to try to get a number of the design, you know, the figurines. Yeah. There's this horse
figurine. You would need a production. I don't know if the original production designer is still alive.
If they can't find some of the real stuff from them...
production photos at the very least and duplicate it.
They will 3D print something.
Yeah, they can 3D print it and get a lot of fans to help out in the end if they want to. Like, hey, I just made a rug for you that fits just in this blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
All the stuff in the boys' room, and it's... It's going to be fun to watch.
Was that one of the original Brady actors actually in there?
Yes, the girl, that was Marcia.
Really? She's aged really well.
She has, and then the guy...
I love the fact that you got instantly attracted when you went, she collects rocks!
Well, yeah. I stole three rocks from the Brady house, from their rock garden in front, that very few people know about.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's kind of the prize of my collection, but it's just here, Marcia. Hey, yeah. And then that was Peter Knight, who played Peter, who was doing the Through the Rock Through the Window.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Here is the episode when Greg's a little boy and takes over Mike's den. It's called, I have to do this because I watched that show.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it.
It is called Episode 18, Our Son the Man. They actually turned it over and gave him the den when he was little. When he looked like this.
Any screen? Okay.
And then they turned Middle around. Years. And that's what the den looked like.
Oh, my gosh.
Because if you remember, they also turned around and they took the attic over, which Gray got. That's
right.
They turned around, Marcia and everybody was fighting. You have to wait, blah, blah, blah. Then they did the episode up and down and transition. Marcia wanted it. Gray gave it to her. Yeah, I'm not a Brady fan. I'm a little fanatic sometimes on that stuff.
That's like good, though. Well, okay, so let's close out what TV shows we've been watching and nerding on. I've been watching and continue to watch WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, still before my time. I was going to add about the Brady thing.
Go ahead, Dad.
The thing was... The thing is, when the Facebook outage happened, I basically said, yes, that's what my generation is worried about. In the 23rd century, this would be a problem for the engineering department, and they would fix it by restoring auxiliary power. So basically, if they're going to recreate the Brady House, this gives me so much hope in the world that one day, I will be long dead, unfortunately, but one day they will create an enterprise that looks exactly like the 60s TV show set, Bridge, and make it actually work. Can you imagine how that would boggle somebody's mind? It would look like you wandered into a 60s TV set, but it's like, no, this button actually does warp speed. You'd be like, who did this?
Okay, was it the Steve Carell movie? What was about the Noah's Ark? Where they recreated?
Oh, you mean Evan Almighty?
Yeah, Evan Almighty. Uh-huh. Imagine if somebody took the dimensions of Star Trek, the first one, the original series, the first Star Trek, and made just a life-size walk-into model and everything. You could turn it into the most mega bed breakfast ever.
Yeah. You could... I personally would want to just warp speed on the actual Enterprise and wander around the corridors in the turbo lift and make it actually work and it does the things it's supposed to do. Although all the things on the outside, or I mean, I should say, all the design, all the like plating would be to make it look like the 60s show, but the technology on the inside would be far more sophisticated.
That would be cool.
It'd be cool.
In 300 years to do an actual. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but they would make a real Enterprise that actually functioned like 23rd century technology, and then they would make a Gene Roddenberry Enterprise just to be like, oh, nice tribute, okay. Bed and breakfast, like you said.
You went back to the original thing. What was that thing Spock used to look into, and he could read, you know, he used to look down,
He's just looking into a scanner. He would say things like, Captain, there seems to be a strange anomaly two quadrants ahead.
Is that like radar at the time, or is that like some kind of like they used like to take the submarine and they stick the
it's supposed
the
to be some
water?
It's probably based on submarine technology, but it's supposed to be like some kind of subspace scanner.
Sometimes when you would look down into it, you could see a reflection or a shadow going over his eyes. I always thought it was like one of those kaleidoscope things when you were a kid.
They do have a screen that looks like a kaleidoscope on the bridge of the Enterprise on the 60s show. Because the thing that was funny about that show is that they didn't really know what computer screens were going to look like back then.
True.
They knew that there were going to be computer screens because everything was reel-to-reel back then. So they were like, what's the screen going to look like? So the best they could do was come up with things that kind of look like graphs and like little, like almost like a frack kind of thing where like there's a line here and there's a vertical line there and all that stuff like that. And I mean, when they kind of were trying to figure out their creativity, you could say the kaleidoscope thing is the shields or something like that. The magnetism of the gravitational field, whatever science you want to say. It's more scientifically sound than Flash Gordon was, for sure.
Okay, and it's that other little device. Remember they had the tricorder, the phaser?
Yeah, the tricorder, the phaser.
They had the little phaser gun. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how did they get the technology from killing to somebody to stunning somebody? You know, just knocking them out. That's pretty cool if you think about it.
Back in the 60s, because it wasn't until we kind of invented tasers that people were starting to, you know, those soft pellets that would knock people out, you know, instead of killing them.
This show, like you said, is really beyond its time.
That show was really beyond its time because not only was it one of the very first, like, TV shows that was basically saying this is what the future is going to look like, you know, in 200 years, there was no smoking on that show, which made all the smoking companies at the time go, what? Because every show a character smoked back in the 60s.
Unless you're hit with a phaser.
Yeah, the other way of smoking. It was an ensemble show. Most shows were not ensemble shows. It had people of different ethnicities, which Whoopi Goldberg said when she grew up, she said, that is the very first show I've ever seen in which African Americans, you know, anybody that looked like her, her words she said, this was the first time I ever saw a show where I could see myself in the future. Because a very famous movie came out around that time, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and there's all white people in it.
Yeah.
So Kubrick kind of made him kind of, he got the technology right, probably, of, you know, what Arthur C. Clarke was thinking. He was a little bit too ahead of his time because we still haven't come up full of technology in that movie. But for some reason, he forgot about all the ethnicities. They had to fix that in 2010 with the Roy Scheider movie.
He missed the boat on that,
basically. He missed that. Gene Roddenberry was a far ahead with that thought because he said, we're going to have a black person on it. We're going to have an Asian person on it. He then came up with a Russian person. How subversive was that
during
in
the Cold War?
He was like, I'm going to put a Russian on here because everybody's going to get along at this point on Earth. We're going to worry more about aliens in this point. Not so much, you know, he's going to use allegory, like the Klingons represent the Soviets, and the Vulcans represent more like a religious, spiritual people at the time.
So you wonder if he had a little world peace going there, a little peace on Earth, the love-in type
of
thing
connected
to the 60s.
He believed there would be no more wars, there'd be no more poverty, because replicators would make food unlimited. You could just turn the machine and say, I want, you know, weird colored fruit, which showed up on that show, and boom, you know, no more hunger. Money wouldn't exist. He believed that people would be trying to benefit each other and help each other out as a human race, and which scares Republicans this day and age, because it's like, well, you know who lives in a socialist government all the time and nobody thinks about this? I'm not even talking about countries. Your pets. You give your dog, your cat free food, and all you do is love them, and they love you back. You can't do that for fellow humans because you can't trust anybody? Yeah, be cautious. I mean, don't be a fool. But trust people more that somebody's going to, you know, probably when we figure that out, like, you know, if people don't have to buy and work so much for money, we'll have a whole generation of lazy asses, sure. But the next generations will say, hey, I'm going to go and colonize Mars. I'm going to go mine the ice caps. Let's go to Pluto and do some mining and figure out what's in all those methane gas wells on Pluto. That's what we should do as a human race. Because right now, my generation, we're not explorers anymore. We're narcissists.
Yeah.
We take pictures of ourselves, and I'm being mean to my own generation. We're flaky and we're narcissists, and we're too obsessed with other people instead of trying to be explorers and try to help people. So, unfortunately, because technology's is teaching us that right now. If we become explorers again and we start going to Mars soon, then people will go, hey, we should go to Mars and start, you know, trying to figure out how to garden on it, like the movie, the Matt Damon movie, the Ridley Scott directed The Martian. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, the scientist, said that that's a very scientifically sound movie. Start, you know, doing that. We'll become explorers again. Because who's got time to take pictures of yourself unless it's somebody taking a picture of yourself on Mars?
There's really no end. There's no nothing good's going to be coming of that. The taking pictures of yourself. That just
only for memories. So
over and over and over.
Only so the new generations could, the next generations after you're long dead, could realize how hot you were.
I mean, that was it. I mean, I took 100 photos out of Bonnie Springs, and I'm posting them like 5 at a time on Facebook.
But so not much of yourself. Like my
I don't put a lot.
My dad did a joke the other day that I thought was really funny. When it snowed here in Vegas, I grabbed a snowball and I took a picture of myself holding a snowball. So it was a selfie with a snowball. And then he posted it on Facebook. He posted all the other pictures of me taking pictures of snow, of the landscape. So snow on the car, snow on the landscape, snow on the street. And I said, oh, no pictures of me? And my dad literally said, the guy from the baby boomer generation says, no, I don't want to break the screen. So he trolled his own son by basically saying he didn't want a picture of his own son on his Facebook. He wanted to take pictures of the snow on the ground.
Oh, all right. So
that's the reaction.
Wrapping up the podcast. Any last thing you want to say, Jersey Mike?
Have you been to Jersey Mike Subs recently?
Yes.
I was going to pull that off.
Which one over by the Wells Fargo?
I had to pull that at the climax.
Any last things you want to say, Brittany?
No, I think that's perfect because you have a mixture of generations, which is us.
Yeah.
A younger generation whose father just said it right. I don't want to put this, and this on there because that's all your generation wants to do, but you can't fault them because that's the way they grew up. So who's the right and the wrong? Got to get back to some kind of exploration, like you said.
Well, yeah, because when people were explorers, and I'm not talking about the imperialist invading stuff. I'm talking about just going like here's a cool thing about James Cameron. He literally went on a submersible, and he just went to the bottom of the Mariana Trench just so he could do it.
Yeah.
Because that's amazing. Well, he's the first filmmaker to ever really do that, to go down
there. I would do that if it was safe.
Yeah, I would go to Mars. My sister has no interest in going to Mars, but I want to go to Mars. It's literally the Mojave Desert, just you need a spacesuit to not die. But I would stand there and think, yeah, it's like Vegas. There's just no plants.
Yeah.
You know, that's it, you know? I wouldn't be scared of it. I'd be more scared about the travel from Earth to Mars because it's literally death, you know? But other than that, you know, exploring, you know, if you're going to take pictures of the beautiful Earth scenery or the culture. Some selfies, I would say, make them more, if they're not about marketing yourself for your career, do more silly selfies. I told that to a girl at Osaka, this kid, who was like, oh, okay, cool. It's cool that we're all eating together at the teppanyaki. And I said, you want some advice when you grow up? Whatever you do on your Instagram, put more silly pictures up. And she was like, what? But it was like, I think that's good advice for the next generation.
That is good advice.
Please do silly pictures because everybody's doing kissy duck faces and trying to look like, you know, sexy strippers from Vegas.
Yeah.
You can only have so many sexy strippers from Vegas.
You can only look so many photos of your kissy.
Unless you're this guy. He would like plenty of those.
Yeah,
all right, so closing out the podcast. Anything else you want to say?
See those DC and Marvel movies? I think that would be really cool. I can't wait to see Yesterday. I was literally bamboozled by that movie. I'm excited to see it. Hope to join you for future podcasts.
You will.
I will have probably my own projects to talk about by that point. Hopefully.
Movie and TV guy Greg Van Cott, thank you for being on the podcast again. You better be back again and again and again.
Thank you very much, Wayne. We'll keep doing this till we die.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't even say age anymore.